Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Premier Football Podcast with me, Hyrule. Joining me here this week are a couple of fellow football fans, fellow speakers, fellow pundits for the podcast. I've got Ewan. Hey, Ewan.
Hello.
And I've got Hatta. Hey, Hatta.
Hello there. Hello.
Let's start things off this week a little bit differently. We normally reserve a section for the SPL later on the show, but let's kick things off the SPL because it was the first week of everything during the past weekend. We had three games, some surprising results, especially the first one where Albirex fell by 2 goals against Tanjung Pagar. A very surprising result, that one. Well, I was at the Sunday game where Lion City Sailors were up against Hougang United, and Hougang took the lead in that one, quite surprisingly. But I have to say that game, right, was really surprised with how Hougang had this really dogged commitment to play things out from the back. It was almost Arsenal-like, right? Like they really wanted to play the ball out from the back no matter what, no matter how hard LCS were pressing them. And it just shows the level of training and commitment that they've been putting in Hougang over there on the Hougang training field. But at the end of the day, the amount of work that goes into what they were planning to do, the high tempo sort of play that they were trying to do for the entire game took its toll. And the kind of overrun by LCS towards the end lah. But it was a quite a exciting game to watch from a neutral standpoint. And Hougang did try and close out strongly towards the last 5 minutes of the game, but unfortunately fell by 1-3 to Lion City Sailors. So to the both of you guys, what do you think of this start to the Singapore Premier League? Is this promising of things to come as well? That this is good, a good sign of where the SPL is heading. Hatta, what do you think?
Well, I think there's going to be lots of cynical voices and eyes towards Lion City Sailors who have splashed the cash, like they've never had splashed cash before. It does seem quite positive looking at how Hougang went for it, because I know if you can't beat them on wages and transfer fees, the least you could do is just give them a good game and make sure that. Now, if they're gonna win, make sure that they've had to slog for that win, and I think that's what happened with Hougang and Lion City Sailors, right? Hougang went straight for it, and they keep playing out from the back, and they keep pushing them all the way. I mean, Lion City Sailors didn't score the winning goal. I think taking them to 2 goals up. Let me see, when did they score that?
I think somewhere,
67
somewhere
minute,
midway
right?
to the second half, yeah.
Yeah, so they really pushed them all the way, and it's hard to look past Lion City Sailors for the win. I mean, look at the amount of talent that they have, look at the amount of resources that they've thrown into it. But what I've liked is I think everyone's saying, screw it, I'm not gonna sit down and complain. I'm just gonna go for it and push ourselves the furthest and see how far we can go. That's what we saw with Balestier Tampines. That's what we saw with Albirex losing as well over the weekend. So I think it's pretty positive. I think it's gonna be very fascinating, and I hope more teams take up that spirit as well, because now there's gonna be a lot more attention on SPL. So I think a lot of teams are saying I've nothing to lose, so let's just go for it. So I like that spirit. I think that would make for a very interesting season. Still, I think Lion City Sailors are going to win, but if everyone else is going to give them a tough time, I think at least that puts up a very good show. That's the least we could do.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with I'm gonna agree with that for sure. And I think this is the beginning of how a very indirect way where one team pumps a lot of money into its squad, and the other teams go like, okay, well, we can't compete. So what do? We have a system. We push 110% and we go for it. And it showed because Aokang scored in the 7th minute. Of course, then Lion City, then roar back and of course try to win the game. And they did emphatically, 3-1. Like you said, they were made, Hata, like you said, they were made to work for their points. And that's what I want to see, because you got a 3-1 game between Lion City and Aokang. Then you have Tanjung Pagar beating Elbereks in a surprise result, 2-0. And the other game was, Ballester and Tampines Rovers drawing 2-2. So, for 3 matches on the opening weekend to have a total of 10 goals, spread across all 3 of them. That's, nine goals. So that's, 10, sorry, my maths. But but that's,
You did say 110% also before that.
Yeah. So, so that's a good thing for any neutrals going to any of the stadiums, watching any of the games, right? You see high quality football, which ends up in goals, right? It's very seldom that there's a goalless draw that is exciting, but that's on the cards for us this week. Although that's another game in another country and another competition altogether. But right now for the Singapore Premier League, this bodes well, because I remember way back when the S League first started. I think it was just raining goals left, right, and center, right? Until the period of dominance by the SAF Warriors, SAF FC, as they were called back then. They were just grinding out results, whether they were 1-0s. And then they would, just whack teams a lot of the times, like 5 goals, right? This bodes well for the start of this new season. So, hopefully more of it to come, with this coming weekend's matches as well. It'll be good. It'll be a good advertisement. I mean, it'll be, any football fan would be like, yeah, we should just go because, we can, it'll be goals and it'll be a good time. So, hopefully long may it continue. Yeah.
And I have to say the quality of play has been quite top notch, considering, expectations of what people, most people would think of, the level of play or standard of play of the SPL, at least. Like Aokang was trying quick passes out from the back, and then from there they will try a switch of flank to catch out the LCS back line, which was very impressive. And I mean, they were pulling it off at least for the first half an hour or so, until the leg started to get weary a little. But it shows definitely signs of progress that Singapore football, Singapore club football is heading in the right direction. With that in mind, and even you said that, that we have some more exciting games to look forward to this coming weekend. Yeah. Any of you guys are planning to catch the games for this coming weekend? Hata?
Yeah, there might be a chance for me to catch the Geylang versus Lion City Sailors game at Tampines Hub this coming Friday evening. So that's an interesting way for us to wind down the week, right? With a bit of football action on a Friday night. That might be quite an interesting one, with the Geylang team being a historically one of the better teams and one of the better supported teams. But then again, they've had a massive, massive reset of their team. I mean, I think we've spoken about it. They are, most of the team is new. I think they lost about 20 over players over the offseason, and they just filled it up with a random bunch of guys. And I'll be interested to see what these random bunch of guys amount to against Lion City Sailors, who are a well-drilled unit, as we saw just recently.
It's random bunch of guys FC.
Random bunch of guys, right, from Geylang. Oh, now that's a different podcast altogether. I think Geylang would not stand much of a chance against Lion City Sailors.
Monday and it's their quality. First game as well, right?
The first game of the season. So, but I would like to see, just like Aokang, right? I would like to see them put up a good fight. I think that's all I want to see. At home at Tampines. So I think that might be a very fascinating game.
Even any particular one that you're looking to or hoping to catch this weekend?
Yeah, if I catch it, it probably will not be live. Hopefully I can, you know, watch a live telecast or at the very, very least catch the highlights. But definitely the Lion City Sailors, you know, we're going to be following them closely. So that's going to be an interesting one. I want to also see how Albirex bounce back against Ballester Khalsa on Saturday. I mean, you know, pushing Lion City Sailors all the way last season, they have to start winning. I mean, it's a small league with like what, eight teams only. So they need to start getting into the rhythm of things as soon as possible. And of course, Tanjung Pagar and Aukang in the last game, both played well last weekend, right? Tanjung Pagar with the surprise win over Albirex and Aukang taking the lead against Lion City. So, I mean, these two teams, you know, if you look at the table, right, they weren't, I guess, you know, last year Tanjung Pagar were last, if I'm not wrong. So, you know, good for them to start the year on a win, and hopefully they can, you know, bring the momentum into this game against Aukang. Yeah, so actually a lot of storylines and threads here already developing in the second week. So that's what makes it fascinating. And then, then from there, we'll go into the third week, fourth week, and, you know, more matches to catch. And
that's how normally a league goes.
Yeah, right, you know. So, yeah. But sometimes, you know, it can start up being boring. Can you imagine if, like, Lion City came out and they, like, whacked Aukang 6-0, and then, you know, this week they win, like, 5-0. And then the following week...
Both Albirex, like, and Lion City Sailors do that, right?
Right, and then they get out to... It makes it a two-horse race so early on. Everybody's like, you know, I'm going to watch, you know. It's not so exciting anymore. Yeah, so this makes it more exciting, yeah.
Right, and before we leave this SPL segment, I've got Jerome to tell us his thoughts of the first weekend as well.
All right, hey guys, Jerome here from the SG Football Podcast. It's been a great first weekend of the season right here. I'm going to start off with the Friday game between Tanjung Pagar and Albirex Niigata. I thought it was an absolutely fantastic victory for Tanjung Pagar. Kel would definitely love that for sure. Kept them at the top of the table. For the second game, Ballester vs Tampines, I've got to say, the one word to describe that game, referees. I thought it was, if you guys are not sure, watch the second goal for Tampines. I'm not too sure what was going on there, but a great comeback from Ballester Khalsa to get back into it. Jumbo Hoshino putting the goal away, and of course, Ensa Brunsovic. For the last game we've seen, Lion City Sailors, Hougang United. I think me and Harold will agree that Hougang started very well with the first goal. But I think after they got tired out, Hougang United, unfortunately, and Lion City Sailors able to grab three goals. Maxim Lestien and Diego Lopez proving the difference. You know, Maxim providing for Diego, and of course, a great win overall for Lion City Sailors, which puts them at the top of the table. Sorry, Kel and Tanjung Pagar. But fantastic overall weekend, and looking forward for more. That's for sure.
Right. Thanks, Jerome. Now, that's all for the SPL. We had another little final that happened over the weekend. I wonder what final is that. something about sponsored by an energy drink, I believe. A Thai energy drink. Not the Crimson Buffalo one, but the other one.
A different type of buffalo. That's a different type of buffalo.
Yeah, different type of buffalo. Yeah. So anyway, that's just enough for me being the non-biased speaker or panelists over here. So I'm going to hand it over to both Ewan and Hatta to give a round out or at least, you know, lead the conversation about the Carabao Cup final. Hatta, you want to start off with that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a hell of a game, right?
Before that, we were hoping that Cal would be here as well, you know, so they wouldn't be so one-sided, but...
Cal between his legs.
Amongst other things between his legs, but
not feeling so good.
I mean, Hyrule, just I guess from a Liverpool perspective, or as impartial as can be, Hyrule, do you think the score was a deserved score? I mean, even right from the start, you know, Kai Havertz, you know, had Pulisic in on for goal, and I thought it was going in, and that was safe, right? So there were chances all around. Did you think, you know, if it wasn't 0-0 as a score, what do you think was a fairer final score, you know, result?
Probably a 2-2 would be fair, I guess. But it was not comfortable watching. I have to admit that it was not comfortable watching one moment at all, 1 minute of the entire 100, what was that, 150, maybe close to 160 with all the injury time and all. Did I get my maths right?
Don't ask me. Yeah,
120 with another 10 minutes or so for injury time, 130
and the penalty shootout time itself.
Yeah,
as well,
that's so, true. Yeah, that's true. Probably close to 150 maybe. Yeah. I was not comfortable watching it. Every time Kai Havertz got the ball, right, I was like, especially in front of goal, like thinking, oh no, here we go again with Havertz's reputation of being their talisman, Chelsea's talisman in finals, right? Being the man to score the winning goal in finals. Every time he got the ball, I was like, oh no, here we go. That's it. Right. But as the commentator said, you know, when they probably look at this final 2-3 years down the road, they probably call it the final where, you know, they will dub it the and the flag is up final. Right.
Yeah.
So many offside calls. But I guess that's how Liverpool plays. I'm not surprised, because if you look at the stats, Liverpool is a team that has caught other teams offside the most.
Yeah.
But it's the way they play. They know that with VAR around,
right,
you have to use that resource, you know, that's given to you. And if that resource is going to help you catch offsides more often than not,
so be
let's
it.
Use it. Like,
yeah.
So
especially if you have a defense capable of stepping up, you know, as skillful and speedy as they are. So
So, like, well, Hatta, like you said, back to your question, right? 2-2, I would say, would be a fair result. And for it to be decided on penalties, but then there's probably another storyline over there, right?
I'm just now looking at the stats, just as an overview. There's 11 shots from Chelsea, there's 20 from Liverpool. It's quite a, you know, big game. It was a really, really big impact game, right? Who do you think on Liverpool's side was the standout player? This is essentially the first team I'm looking at, right? Front three with Diaz is slotting in. They had so many players on the bench to make a difference. Jota.
I have to say Van Dijk probably made the difference, because if he wasn't there to marshal the defense, we wouldn't have caught so many Chelsea players offside. I think that was the difference, right? And to allow Chelsea less freedom to run back, run behind that defense, you know, and every time they try to do that, they're caught offside. He marshaled the defense well enough so that there's less risk of that happening, basically, of Chelsea running behind the defense to a through ball or something of that matter. Luis Diaz played well until he got tired out towards the end of the 90 minutes.
English football catching up with him. Yes.
Yeah, but he did run Chalobah ragged.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Origi couldn't do the same. Jota didn't look match fit at all. But, you know, you have to play what you have, lah. And thankfully, they were able to hold out until the penalty shootout. Yeah.
I wanted to say, though, just on the balance of things, just watching it from a purely, you know, neutral standpoint, I thought Chelsea had the better chances until you told me about that stat, Hatta, about the shots on target. Chelsea with 11 and Liverpool with 20.
Is it on target, just shots, or just on goal?
Just efforts. Efforts on goal,
right?
So if you want to talk about
on target?
Shots on target, Chelsea had 4, Liverpool had 6.
Okay, so you're talking about, like, efficiency wise, Chelsea were more efficient. And, you know, you mentioned Kai Havertz, right? But Mason Mount was probably just as, if not more, guilty of missing so many gilt edge chances. He hit the inside of the post for one, and there was one that he beat the offside trap, and it was just slightly stuck under his foot, and he just directed it wide. So I think he was getting free because, you know, he was from the midfield, but for some reason, you know, with such a high pressure, high level final with everybody playing well, I just wanted to say also, you know, when you asked the question about who's the standout player, right? Kelleher came to mind for Liverpool as well, because, you know, he I mean, the guy looked, Alisson just really didn't have to work that day, literally, you know. I mean, he played like, you know, Callagher played really out of his mind. You can see why he's rated highly by Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool. But Mendy on the other side, which I thought that probably ended up being the difference, because here you have probably your first team goalkeeper, the guy that plays week in, week out, the league, right? First choice. And he's playing superbly, right? Even that one point blank save he made from Sadio Mane, that one that was probably 9 times out of 10, Sadio Mane would bury that, stuck out a hand and tipped it over the bar miraculously. Of course, also, you know, it's they're both Senegal teammates, which is kind of funny as well. You know, and then coming to the penalty shootout, he gets substituted for, you know, Kepa, the hero, Arrizabalaga. And I don't know. I don't think the strategy, I don't know, that sort of strategy works, you know, because you have a goalkeeper who's played the entire match. He's on a high. He should be shown, the manager should stick by him to show, you know, I mean, his confidence in him and his ability. I thought there were actually a couple of what was it the second last penalty that Liverpool took? Or the third from last, I can't remember which one. That was it. I thought it was within saving range, and I think
That was the one by Konate. He almost saved it.
Yeah. So Kepa stuck out his hand for some reason. It hit the top of his glove, but it still went in.
Mm.
So I was like, whoa, that was, you know, because the angle they were showing the penalty shootout from was from the shooter's point of view. So you could see how far away, how near, how close the keepers were to saving it. And that one, I thought. That one was that was the chance that Chelsea had to save that penalty. So, and then of course he tops it all off by just blasting the ball over the bar, you know, when he should have just buried it. And then he just put it next to the you know, and it had to come right after the Callagher penalty, which was excellent. The amount of power, I don't know how he got swerve on it on that distance, but he did. And it was like nigh impossible to save. So, you know, on the balance of things,
you know,
I
have to say what I did when I just realized now, thinking back, right? What I did when Kepa blasted the ball over the bar was raise both my hands up in the air like a rugby referee when, you know,
2 points, no, 3 points.
You scored a conversion.
Like an NFL, extra point, I just thought the only thing was missing was a goal, right? But we did get plenty of disallowed goals. And I thought the weirdest of which was the one that was by what's his name?
Lukaku?
The Lukaku one, I didn't actually have a good look, but I think he was marginally offside, right?
Yeah,
was he
supposedly marginally offside, yeah.
The one that Liverpool scored with
Matip scored.
Matip scoring, right? Yeah. That was called offside because Van Dijk was offside, but yet he was not, you know, technically, he wasn't involved, but the referee deemed that he was influenced the play. So, you know, he was considered offside. But if you look at it, that was a clean goal. I thought that was a clean goal. Should have been allowed. It all balances out. Chelsea missed the chances they had. They had a, you know, Lukaku disallowed goal. They had a, who else scored for them and also disallowed because of the
Havertz
offsides.
Well.
Havertz, yeah, that's right. So, yeah, you know, you're right. You know, 2-2 would have been made for a more exciting scoreline, and going to the penalty shootout, if it had gone 11-10, that would have been perfect. But I mean, you know, how many games do you actually, how many cup finals do you actually have where you're like, wow, that's fantastic, right? So, so credit to both sides. I just thought that, you know, one side played excellent, both sides played excellent, and it just came down to the details. And unfortunately, that detail right now is looking like the whole Kepa saga with, you know, him coming on to be trying to be a hero during the penalty shootout. Yeah, I just think that's not a great way for a team to be. And if I was Kepa, I wouldn't want to be that goalkeeper who comes on only when there's a penalty shootout and like tries to win the, you know, the cup or whatever during that. It's so, yeah.
I mean, I do see it from Chelsea's point of view, though, because it's been done before. Tuchel's done it before, right? Bringing Kepa on just before a penalty shootout. And
don't forget that he, this once that he stayed on against the manager's
he refused to go off.
He backs himself. He backs himself.
Yeah.
And he refused to go off for another keeper who was supposed to be a penalty saving specialist, right?
Yes. Yes.
In Caballero.
Yeah. Just to quote our good friend Cal, Kepa booted the ball all the way to Lazio so that he could apologize to Sarri for not coming off all those years ago. Yeah, that was pretty fun. But yeah.
But Kepa had a better penalty saving record from saving penalties within the 90 minutes than Mendy did.
So it makes sense on paper. On paper, at the time, it makes sense. Yeah.
And, yeah, but at the moment,
But nobody says anything about, you know, him bringing in Jorginho primarily to take penalties also.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? Nothing much was said about it because Jorginho scored the penalty.
Yes,
and everyone knows Jorginho. Yeah,
everyone. Who's this guy? Oh, Jorginho.
Everyone knows, you know, he takes a good penalty, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently, when Salah passed by him, right after Salah took his penalty, he told Jorginho, "Don't jump." But he proceeded to jump.
And he jumped.
Yeah.
Nice.
But I think, you know, in the long term, I think if we are going to have football games where you're allowed 5 substitutions within a game, we may see the evolution of football teams into having a bench, right? That is sort of like a mini special team.
Right, right. Special teams,
So
closer,
like
the closer, right?
Yeah. Like the closer team. Yeah. So that you have the first 11 doing what they can for the first 60 minutes or so, 60, 65 minutes. Then the closing team will then come in after that to take over.
It's part of the strategy as well, right?
Yeah.
If you look at Chelsea's bench, they had Lukaku, Timo Werner, Reece James. These guys are fast, powerful.
Yeah.
You know, against tight legs, you know, you're talking about Van Dijk marshalling the offside line very well, but not every team they're gonna play against is gonna have a Van Dijk. You know, they're gonna if they close out with Lukaku and Timo Werner, that's like a luxury that no other team, almost no other team can provide, right?
Yeah.
So I do quite like the 5 subs rule. I believe it's not been reinstated back into Premier League yet. But I absolutely love it because it gets you to think about, you know, your subs and changing up. It's essentially what you're doing, you're changing half your team.
That adds
a new tactical element to it.
Yep.
Just look at Liverpool's team as well. They brought in Jota, Origi, who's a great closer, who's a great clutch player. Harvey Elliott, you know, James Milner, who's an evergreen player. Konate as well. You know, for extra pace and power.
Yeah, basically, you know, they changed out the entire spine.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. For the second half of the game.
Correct. And that's great tactics, and I want to see more of that.
Yeah, I want to see tactics, right? You don't want to see this 11 versus 11 and with, like, you know, changes. If one is an injury, it's an injury forced substitution, that's already not tactical. But if you have 5, right, you can play around with it. If you do have someone who really gets hurt, you can substitute them without you know, affecting, I think, too much your tactics, you know, rather than be forced into something that rather than have your team be forced into a strategy because you can't, there's no room for, no wiggle room, right, for substitutions. Yeah, I think the 5 player substitute thing is good. And, you know, bigger squads, but more widely used squads. I think that's more useful rather than having, you know, 2x first 11 quality players, a la Man City or something, and then, then every other team like suffers because they only have 1x first 11 and then there are a few more substitutes. I think that would definitely work better. Is the Premier League the only European league that's using 3 subs?
I think the major leagues, yes.
Yes, right. Yeah.
The only one. Yeah, but I think they're looking at changing to it to 5
all the COVID issues, right?
And because everyone's following suit, and even FIFA has said that, you know, this will be the permanent ruling moving forward, even after COVID. Yeah, so you'll see in the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, how much more exciting is the World Cup going to be, right? When you got this sort of 5 more players I think, more strategies.
I think it also helps the players, because then, you know, you won't have players that are too tired out.
Yeah.
And because, you know, your players are being rotated more often, even within within games.
Yeah, agree. Yeah. Agree. Yeah.
Well, since we're on the topic of tactics, let's talk about one of the master tacticians in football in the world, who unfortunately had to suffer the dreaded managerial axe, which is Marcelo Bielsa at Leeds. I mean, personally, you know, it's a pity to see him go, but I do have to admit that he sort of overstayed his welcome at Leeds in a way. This has been one of his longest managerial stints. Yeah. Most of the time he would stay maybe two seasons at a club and then move on, because most teams just are not able to, you know, keep up with what he wants to do. But unfortunately, this current tenure at Leeds has ended because, well, it could be that because, you know, he's got a lot of players out injured. It could be because of wear and tear, you know, trying to keep up with what he wants from his players. And also some people say, you know, because of his resistance to change, of his persistence in trying to play just one certain way, and stick to it, right? Man marking definitely is one of his hallmarks as well. Hatta, what do you think? I know it's we all feel that, you know, it's a pity to see him go, but Leeds have been very, very poor and they're looking quite dire at the moment.
I mean, Bielsa's a revolutionary, right? But he's also a bit of a one-trick pony. That one trick of his is very good until it grinds everyone down. I'm not saying that people hate him or whatnot, but I think his process is it only goes at top gear, right? Yeah. And he doesn't know how to manage those gears. And now
I think he's still well loved at Elland Road.
He's absolutely well loved. I mean he's so integrated to the community. I think there's a recent story about how this kid approached him to ask for a signature, and he's told the kid, "Could you pass me another one of those photos?" And the kid asked why, because I want to have a copy of this as well. So very touching. And I think he genuinely loves the community. And I think the community, as with, English football, you know, once you get a sense that this person loves the community and puts the ultimate effort into that community, I think the community loves you back. And you could really feel the love with Bielsa and the Yorkshire community. He's also taken them out from the Championship back to the Premier League for the first time in like 20-odd years. So I think they're always look at him fondly. But you're right, I think results hasn't been good. You know, him playing his high-intensity game has caused a lot of injuries. And they don't have that kind of money to have a deep squad like, you know, we were talking about Chelsea and Liverpool just now, right? Lukaku and Timo Werner off the bench. They don't have such depth, and that has caused them a lot of problems. Could he, I guess, reduce the load and go easier? Possibly, but the team wouldn't be the same. So he's just been kind of grinding through, you know, the gears and bringing youth players to fill in all these gaps. But naturally, it just doesn't work out. You know, it's something that's highly choreographed, highly trained for. Highly specialized as well, his plan. I do wonder whether he should look at, you know, kind of a director of football role somewhere. I think he's kind of like Arsene Wenger, who doesn't really enjoy the administrative strategic side. Like he wants to get his hands dirty every day, even more so than Arsene Wenger, who's you know, Arsene Wenger, after taking time out from Arsenal, has realized that, you know, actually there is more to the world than just going for training day in there. But I think Bielsa lives for it. I hope he can take a bit of a rest because he's not getting any younger. And, you know, his style, his passion, his philosophy to work is unrelenting. So I hope he gets good rest. And you know, I think the Leeds team, if they get relegated, I think they're still hold him up in high regard. And I don't think they have any regrets. Even if I think there's a good chance to get relegated, I don't think they're too fast about it. And I think they're going to bring in another high-intensity, high-octane manager in Jesse Marsh, who could maybe build on top of that philosophy instead of changing it all entirely.
Ewan, do you think Leeds have it in them to stay up after this?
I think they do. I mean, as a team and individually, they've shown that they have ability. But I think this is another instance, as we were just talking about, like having five substitutes versus three. I think this hit them hard. Because last year, throughout the whole COVID affected season, was five, right? And of course, back then also less injuries. I think this season they're suffering even more. But this could be a direct result of him, Bielsa, putting out the best 11 he has constantly, and them being, you know, worn out, wear and tear, injuries, you know, long-term injuries, and those who are still in the team suffering from a bit of a mental burnout because they have to keep playing week in, week out. And this hard sort of high pressing man-to-man marking system, you know, is tiring. It's hard to play. But yeah, you know, you're right, Hata. I think he's well-loved. I think he has fans, even from outside of Leeds, just seeing what he has done with the team and seeing what he's done with teams previously. Because, you know, I really just really became a fan of his when he was with Athletic Bilbao, right? And he had that team with all young players, right, that stunned Manchester United in the Champions League that one year. Yeah, I've been watching him, I suppose. It wasn't until Leeds, I suppose, because he went to Lille and he was at another team. Where was he? Lazio, Marseille as well. But it wasn't until Leeds that he was sort of kind of back in the spotlight, because he's got one of the older English teams, brought them back from, like, you know, you said, years and years of being like out of the Premier League, right? Looking really good in the first season. But you know, the last few matches, yeah, something was amiss. So unfortunately, I guess maybe the players were feeling it, just morale wise. Maybe he was at a loss of what to, well, probably he was at a loss of what, at a loss of what to do. So yeah, I guess there comes a point where, you know, maybe Leeds was the team. I guess they could also feel it. Leeds was the team that he wanted to make a real go of it, right? To stay long enough to build something. You know, to stay as long as possible, but I guess it wasn't to be. And I guess the legacy he does leave behind is a good foundation, at least hardworking players, players who were discovered from, you know, playing in the championship, players who are not known, well known internationally, but suddenly becoming stars, right? Becoming a bit of household names. So it's unfortunate that he has to be that he has to go, but yeah, I mean, Leeds, looking at the way they were just 2-3 weeks ago and where they are now, all the other rivals have really picked up, really stuck in, and just, you know, made a fist of it, you know, winning, showing that they're not easy to break down. Whereas Leeds have been the opposite. Right. And I think not for a lack of trying. They were still trying to play their man-to-man marking system and all that. But as the Liverpool match showed, they were easily torn apart by, like, okay, so you man-to-man mark. I'll just push forward my one guy, Joel Matip, who's not being marked. And then nobody's marking him. And then he passes off, runs through, gets to the end of the ball, scores, you know, the third goal of the game or whatever, you know. So it really looked like schoolboy stuff, you know, schoolboy defending, really. Unfortunate for him, but I guess he'll be better for this experience, and Leeds will be better off for having him as a manager, and hopefully they get someone else, you know, who can build upon this, and hopefully we'll see Marcelo Bielsa again, you know, back in the Premier League, because he's quite a personality and quite a, I mean, I'm just so tickled by the fact that he understands English, but he still speaks to an interpreter, you know, and we know this because when the interpreter says something, then he'll correct the interpreter sometimes, and then it's like, what is this guy, so sneaky, but yeah, you know, so yeah, so yeah, like, unfortunate, but you know, we move on, I suppose. Leeds move on, have to move on. Yeah.
Now, Hata, you mentioned that there looks like that you're going to be getting Jesse Marsh, ex Salzburg short stint at Leipzig to be the next manager. He's not Ted Lasso, definitely.
Yeah.
But what kind of manager do you think this will be for Leeds?
You know, I was reading a lot about his so-called failure at Leipzig. You know, I think speaking about being one-dimensional, I mean, it's a bit of a disservice, lad, to call any of these guys one-dimensional. I mean, all these managers are smart, intelligent managers, right? So what happened at Leipzig was, you know, he thought he could just impose the Red Bull blueprint of high-intensity pressure, high pressure, you know, it's just full-on high-intensity game. But, you know, Leipzig under, what's his name again? Nagelsmann. Right? So they evolve a little bit, right? So they were able to play the high-intensity game, but also when the situation called for it, play a possession game. So being, I think, for lack of a better word, a one-track philosophy, he tried to, again, get them to reverse their gears a bit and just work on the high-intensity stuff, although the Leipzig team has you know, evolved a little bit and could do a bit of both. That's where he struggled, because there was a slight clash of cultures, strangely, because they're still part of the Red Bull family. But I think that team tactically has evolved a little bit, right? So they weren't the exact right match. I think he's learned a lot about management and managing people and managing expectations. I think if he comes to Leeds, while on paper it may seem like a very similar format where it's high intensity, I think he's smart enough to understand the vagaries of it and how he could add his small touches into the game while staying true to himself. I think at Leipzig, he didn't really stay true to himself. He tried to do a little bit of Nagelsmann, a little bit of himself, da da da. I think it, what how it's helpful is that I think Bielsa's formula is rather similar to the Red Bull formula, similar to his formula as well. I hope he does well, because there hasn't been a lot of US coaches who've done well as well. The last one we had was Bob Bradley, I think, at Swansea, and there's a bit of xenophobia, right? They were not really keen on him. They were making fun of some Americanisms, like he called penalty kicks PKs, stuff like that, right? So I hope they're a bit more welcoming to him, and I hope he could, you know, bring something new, because he was quite a revelation at Salzburg, and you know, he groomed Erling Haaland and Minamino and all these guys. So I hope he could add his own flavor to this Leeds team. Might be a bit too late in the season for him to salvage something, especially with the injuries that they have and so late into the season. Whether he's okay with, you know, going to the championship, that might be quite fascinating. But they have more than enough quality in there for them to trouble championship teams next season. I think there is a 50-50 chance that he might get swept into their deteriorating form. But if he
get caught in relegation battle,
I feel that given a full preseason, I think he might be a really fascinating appointment for them, because it's quite a similar approach to what he has. Not exactly the same, but quite similar.
Cool. Well, it's not confirmed yet, so we're all still monitoring the news sites and news feeds to see whether it's going to be rubber stamped, or, you know, are we going to be caught unaware and they hire someone else, you know, for all you know. I mean, there's other good managers who, at this point in time, are still out there looking for a job. Nuno Espirito Santo, I think, is still available also.
Not the same philosophy, though.
Not the same philosophy.
Yeah, that would be a
might be a car crash. Yeah.
But we'll see. Interesting times on from Leeds in that aspect. Hopefully, things will, you know, turn the better for them, because it'd be a waste to have them out of the Premier League, lah, considering the pedigree and history they have with the Premier League as a whole, and also being, you know, the final club to ever win the old First Division title.
Yeah, with Eric Cantona.
The club that brought Eric Cantona to England.
That brought Eric Cantona to Manchester United. Oh, man.
Well, that's all we have for this week's podcast. You know, could have been longer, but unfortunately, you know, Cal is still...
licking his wounds.
Licking his wounds, yes. Yeah. Hopefully, he'll be all better next week. Yeah. Because there's some things happening, brewing at Chelsea, but I think until things are clearer, we won't say too much about it. Right. So let's wait a week or so, and maybe, you know, Cal might have some additional insight into it from the Chelsea fan base. So other than that, that's all from me, from Hyrule this week. Anything from you guys as a last word? Ewan?
Nope. We're just looking forward to the weekend's SPL games and the Premier League game. So yeah, just looking
and the Championship games, because, you know, that's exploding as well. So Blackburn playing Fulham at the weekend. So
that's a nice
Fulham
one.
Fulham leaders. Yeah, runaway
that's
leaders.
That's a nice one.
Hopefully Blackburn can score more than one goal. I don't know who can score at all. But yeah, they got a win over QPR over the weekend, which are their direct rivals for third place. So that is a good result. But Huddersfield currently right now above both Blackburn and QPR, because having they have played a game more. But yeah, you know, very close, very close. And
when is the Blackburn Fulham game again, Ewan?
It's this weekend, so it should be Saturday, if I'm not wrong.
And I think for those of you who have Singtel, it should be live, right?
Yeah, it should be. It should be. I've seen more games live from Blackburn this year than I've seen in the past decade. So, you know, yeah, that shows you. Yeah, that they're close. I guess, you know, that's yeah, my glass half full point of view on this. But yeah, better watch them while I still can.
Okay, well, that's all from us for this week. We'll catch up with you guys again next week. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, and bye.